Now, in Jesus' day, people believed that the cause of sickness was your sin. You got sick because you had sinned. Now, that's kind of bad news for those of us during cold season. But that's what they believed. And if you were born sick, you got sick because your parents sinned. So Jesus' disciples asked him exactly that. Whose sin caused this man to be born blind? But Jesus waves aside that whole assumption. And in fact, he doesn't claim that the man's blindness was anyone's fault at all. Instead, he says, the man's blindness will end up revealing God's glory. Now, that must seem kind of unlikely to the people gathered there. I mean, the man clearly had been a fixture in his village. One of those pathetic people you pass by every day and whose situation seems so hopeless and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it, even if you tried. I'm thinking of this quadriplegic man whose wheelchair used to be parked in front of the coffee shop on the east side where I often study. I mean, he was there for years, getting grayer and more bent all the time. And if some passing fellow I didn't know told me that this man, this sad, crippled man, was going to reveal God's glory, I think it was either a sick joke or the fellow was nuts. I mean, how can God bring goodness out of something as terrible as being born crippled or blind? Jesus gives us a clue with his next words. As long as I am in the world, Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Now, these I ams are important. The Greek version, ego en me, means literally I am, or I am. I am is the name God gives himself when he first appears to Moses in the burning bush. Moses asks his name, and God replies with those same words, ego en me, I am, as in God, existence itself. So when Jesus says, I am the light, the Jewish people gathered there would recognize that he is identifying himself with the divine. Jesus is identifying himself with God. And then Jesus goes to work. He spits on the ground, makes a little bit of mud, spreads it on the man's eyes. Notice the intimacy there, like something a mom might do when her kid fell and a little boo-boo, you know, trying to make it go away. And then Jesus sends the man to wash in a nearby pool, and when he washes his eyes, he can see. For the first time in his life, a man can see. Can you imagine? Like if the crippled man one day just suddenly straightened and stood up and walked and danced around his wheelchair. I mean, how cool would that be? The blind man can see, but the Pharisees do not. Pharisees are not excited or blown away. They do not see the glory of God revealed at all. When the man is brought before them, they want to know exactly how it happened. The man says, I don't know. This guy just made some mud in front of my eyes and I don't even see. And then the Pharisees want to know on what day it happened. On the Sabbath? Well, that's not right. What kind of a person would do work on the Sabbath? He can't be a religious person. And if this man was blind because of his mean now that he can see that sins are gone? And who did this anyway? Did you get his name, his social security number, his email address? What kind of insurance does he have? And then they start getting to his parents. They say, how do we really know he was born blind? So they call in the guy's old mom and dad, and they don't want to get in trouble with the religious authorities, so they say, we don't know, that's our son. He used to be blind. Go talk to him. So the Pharisees call the guy again, and they say, who did this to you? Was he a sinner? And how did you say this happened again? Do you see how they're getting bogged down in the details? Do you see how anxious and mattered they're getting? So stressed out by the whens and hows that they're missing the whole point. I'm sorry to say that I can totally relate to the Pharisees right here. There are times when life piles up on me so thick and fast that I lose my way. During my last semester at the seminary in Chicago, I fell behind in my homework and my reading. Then I came down with a mean sinus infection, temples throbbing, low fever. I did badly. pages and pages of reading, a project I didn't understand. I knew with sickening certainty that there was physically just not enough time to do all the things which absolutely had to be done. Maybe you felt that right once or twice yourself. I started having nightmares, waking up in the mornings in a cold sweat, panicking. I was bogged down in details, and I couldn't see to save my very life. Then one morning, I took a dogless walk around the seminary neighborhood, Noel Hector in Chicago. I was trying to pray. I stopped at a dog park for a while and watched this young golden retriever running after a frisbee his owner was throwing. The dog ran the length of the park, leaping up to catch the frisbee, racing back to the man, barking in pure joy and excitement, wagging his tail, wriggling his whole body. And when the man lifted the frisbee again, he raced back and forth again and again, barking his laughing bark. And as I watched, a thought this is what the thought said. The thought said, "Do you think it's just possible that you're taking life too seriously?" And it was a really good thought. And as I felt that thought, it was as if a camera pulled back. And I suddenly saw this whole period of my life in wide-angled perspective. I even saw dimly a day like today when I no longer quite recall the names of the courses I was taking or the kind of essay I had to write. I felt certain right then, as I do now, that that good thought came right from the mouth of God. And after that, oddly enough, everything was okay. Of course, I would like to say that a stranger showed up, spit on the ground, and handed me a completed 20-page essay. But even though I still had a hard time to get through, more than a few near all-nighters, lots of Advil and decongestants, and phone calls to Jim, after that day, I just suddenly had faith that everything would work out. This is how the former blind man put it to the Pharisees. He said, "I don't know exactly who the man who healed me was, but one thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." The Pharisees, like me, had been getting bogged down in details. It was as if they thought they were attending a place like this sanctuary right here, where from my perspective, there are a lot of doors. Don't you feel like your life is like that sometimes, too many doors? Which door should we go through, the Pharisees wonder? That one? The one where we take our Old Testament laws literally?
He did heal that guy on Sabbath.
Or that one? The one where we follow all our prejudices? I mean, who can really trust a man from Galilee? How about that one? The one where we give in to our worst fears? What if he's a false prophet, led to harm us, or drawn us astray? Jesus, however, does not give up on the Pharisees even here. Life, he says, in today's gospel reading, is not at all like the sanctuary with many doors. It's just not that complicated. Instead of being like Christ our Savior, life is really more like a sheep pen, and there's just one door, just one gate. So it's easy. You know who the shepherd is, because he's the one who's coming through the gate. I mean, thieves or bad people wouldn't go through the gate. They'd try to sneak in or break in through the fence. Even the sheep know that. And they not only know that the shepherd is the one coming through the gate, they recognize the voice. And the shepherd calls them up. Now, not having grown up on a farm, I have not always been able to get with the whole Bible sheep and shepherd metaphor. I mean, I have hardly ever seen sheep. Probably make some of you feel differently, but the only time I ever touched one was in a petting zoo. But I read recently that Palestinian shepherds really did name their sheep. They named them things like long ears or white nose. And that idea pulls me right into Jesus' world. There's something so homely and affectionate about that shepherd knowing and naming each of the sheep, leading and protecting them. Think about what it takes when you choose a name for a child or a pet. And that is the warmth and the knowing that God and Jesus extends to the Pharisees of all people. That is the warmth and the knowing that God and Jesus extends to us. The Pharisees in John's Gospel, however, still don't get it. So Jesus has to spell it out. I mean, if he had a chalkboard, he'd be drawing a diagram at this point. I am again. The Pharisees hear it. Jesus speaks with God here. He speaks as God. I am the gate. Whoever comes by me will be saved. Thieves may come to hurt or destroy the sheep, but I came so that they might have life and have it abundantly. Don't you love that? Abundant life here, it does not mean later in heaven or in eternity or after Jesus comes again. It means life here, right now, but lived rich and full and complete the way God intends. It means rich and full and complete, like lasagna at a really good restaurant where the pasta is homemade and the meat and the sauce has been cooking all day and it seasons just right so that when you take a bite, it fills and forms you. That's the life that Jesus promises us when we trust in Him. That's the difference I felt that day with the sun here in Chicago. That's abundant. Like the Pharisees, we tend to clutter our minds with too many details, too many questions. But God's got, but John's gospel reminds us that the answer is really quite simple. It's Jesus. My favorite Mother Teresa story. It's one that I say often, but it bears repeating, and that's when she was in Cambridge, England, receiving an honorary doctorate. One of the reporters gathered around her asked her, "What made you start your work? What inspired you and kept you going during so many years?" And Mother Teresa answered, "Jesus." And the reporter waited, and he was hoping for a longer explanation, but she just repeated, "Father, tell them you do it for Jesus." 3 weeks ago, Christians the world over celebrated the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. Jesus who died but then somehow rose again in a turnaround more splendid than a man born blind receiving his sight. Jesus who rises again today in each of us, whose presence among us we cannot deny, especially here as Christ our Savior in the work we do in our many ministries to the poor in Sussex and beyond. And the nurture and support you've given me this year at my internship, and the love of mothers that some of us are celebrating today, and in the love of fathers and all our family and friends, Jesus has risen indeed. But we can't always see him. At the end of the story of the formerly blind man, there's a wonderful little closing note. The Pharisees, still blind themselves, have kicked the guy out of town. So Jesus calls him over and asks him if he believes of God. "Well, who's that?" the man asks. "That's me," Jesus replies. And the man says simply, "Then Lord, I believe." When the stuff of life clouds our vision, the deadlines and the details, the losing of jobs and friends and aging parents and kids going to college, the business of packing up and saying goodbye and starting new, the pressures and the worries and the fear of dying, when the stuff of life follows our vision, let us train our eyes on the risen Jesus who calls us by our names, whose voice we know in the very bottom of our bones. Let us train our eyes on Jesus and say with the newly healed blind man,